Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Otis Williams on the show today. Otis is Executive Director at the St. Louis Development Corporation. Otis, thank you so much for making the time. I know how busy you are, so thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Otis, you and I met recently because we were there talking about technology for the St. Louis Development Corporation. So we haven't known each other that long, but I knew when I met you, I'm like, Otis needs to come onto the podcast. I know that your story is going to be really inspiring to our listeners.
Well, great. Thank you.
So what was growing up like for you? You didn't grow up in St. Louis, right?
No, I did not. My connection to St. Louis is actually I married a St. Louis girl.
So, I hear that a lot.
Yes. So I grew up in Georgia, a little town outside of Atlanta called Covington, Georgia. It's about 30 miles from Atlanta along Interstate 20. I left there at the age of 16 to go to college and have not lived there since. So I went to the university, South Carolina State University, and then on to the Army for 29 years.
So you went to college when you were 16?
When I was 16, yeah.
That is incredible. Wow.
Well, it just...
You skipped a couple of grades, I assume?
No, it was location. And so I grew up in a house that was directly across the street from the school, and the first grade teacher was friends with my mom. And so they realized that I may have been a little advanced.
Right.
And so I went to school at, I was four, turned five. So as a result, I just kept going.
That's awesome.
There were issues related to that because I was never with my peer group. So when my friends were driving, I was still hitching a ride.
Right. Exactly.
And I just remember that for the, we have something called the junior senior prom and the small town. And so both the juniors and seniors had their event together. And in my junior year, I didn't have a driver's license. Everybody else in my class did. And so
your date had to drive you? Is that what happened?
Well, actually, it was worse than that. My father had to drop us off.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So
you kind of got a jump start, though.
I did.
There.
I got a jump start.
That's wonderful.
I probably would do it all over again. But,
yeah.
You know, but that was one handicap early.
So when you went to college, what was your degree in?
Civil engineering technology. And I went on to do graduate studies. And facilities engineering management at Arizona State. So the Army, fortunately, were able to send me on to graduate school there. So I ended up graduate school there and also at Jackson State University.
So you went into the Army as an officer.
I did. I was commissioned as a second lieutenant. And so, you know, it was the height of Vietnam. And so the option was to go in as an enlisted person or as an officer. And so luckily I was able to go in as an officer. And the goal was at the time, because my peers all were laughing, because in ROTC, you know, you have this group. And so there were like 50 of us who were in the same class. And I bet all 50 of them would have said the person most likely not to stay in the Army would be Otis Williams.
Right.
And as it turns out, I'm the one that stayed probably the longest and moved the farthest.
You stayed there for almost 30 years, right?
Almost 30 years. And the reason I was there so long, I kept getting opportunity. And as I indicated, the Army afforded me the opportunity to get a graduate degree at their expense. And I kept getting great assignments. I look back on my past, and I had the opportunity to work for Colin Powell and others like that that, you know, influenced me greatly over time. So it was good.
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine working under leadership like Colin Powell. So when you retired, you were a colonel.
My father used to ask me, when are you going to get out? And I would say, as long as they're promoting me, I will. And so I was fortunate to get promoted to colonel and serve. And at that point, I decided that I probably need to change jobs because I didn't see the future.
The next step.
The next step. So then I retired and actually took a job here. As I was saying, I retired on June 30th of 1998 and came to work here in St. Louis on July 6th of 98. So just a few days.
So you had a few days.
I had a few days. And so I've been working at this job now since that time, or at least with the SLDC since that time.
Sure. My dad was a Marine. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law was in the Army. My husband's uncle was a Green Beret, you know. So in talking to both my dad and my father-in-law, my dad would say there's nothing that will turn a boy into a man quicker than being in the military.
You're right. My father said the same for me because he did not foresee me being that person. In fact, he used to laugh and says, you need to stay in school because you aren't going to be able to work these day jobs out there. You need to use your brain.
Okay.
And so, as a result, there's a lot to be said for the Army with the standards that they have and the discipline that is instilled in folk. It's a good thing.
So that's where I was going with that, is it's the best leadership training in the world, right? So what are some of those leadership tenets that you learned there that now you see that you've carried forward with you?
Well, I mean, a lot of it's around the moral code, really, you know, and you've talked to my staff, they'll tell you integrity and honesty are the things that are drivers for us. And so we don't do anything that can't stand an open window. So I instill that in all of my folks. And the other thing I tell them is that bad news does not get better, you know, by holding on to it. And so just always tell me, no matter what the issue is, where we're going. And so I stand tall on integrity.
Mm-hmm. That is so good. You just reminded me. So Don Imhaltz was on the podcast a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and he was the former CIO for Centene. And he said you could always tell the culture of a company by how quickly bad news rose to the top. It sounds like you've got the same kind of policy at the St. Louis Development Corporation that you want them to tell you, good or bad, right?
Well, they have to, you know, because I'm always being approached by people, and if I don't know all the aspects of it, then I can respond differently, you know, on some things, you know. Mm-hmm. To a person in my organization, they know that no matter what, it could be good or bad, they need to let me know what's going on because I'm generally the mouthpiece for the organization and in many cases for the city on economic development matters.
Right. So how did that transition happen from, you know, being a colonel in the Army to 5 days later being the executive director?
Well, I wasn't the executive director immediately. Okay. So I was hired to do a specific project, and this specific project in the city, really they just wanted to take advantage of my leadership ability, I assumed. So I came to do what was called a Hope 6 project, and the Hope 6 project is around the old city hospital just south of downtown. And that community around Nestle Purina had about 12 buildings that were about 14 stories tall, 12 to 14 stories tall. And most of those apartments were abandoned. In fact, there were about 2,000 units. And so my job was to try and transform that. We essentially was to demo all of those facilities and then to rebuild some new around it and to provide new infrastructure around it. And so I told my wife, I said, well, I can do that for 2 years because it's a typical Army assignment and that we can move on. And one of the reasons that I was attracted to it is that we had never had an opportunity to spend any appreciable time in St. Louis, which is my wife's home. And so getting out, I decided, well, we can take this job in St. Louis and be here for a short time, get this thing done. And it had nothing to do with me understanding economic development, but it had a lot to do with being able to lead and to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, I went through that process. We got that done, and I just continued to work. I got involved in other things, and one more thing.
One thing led to another.
So while I was doing the initiative, the Convention Center Hotel came up, and so the Marriott Grand was the next project where we were trying to get that done, and mm-hmm. so it kept going and rolled. to Busch Stadium to just a number of things just repetitively.
Yeah. You have been involved in so many different initiatives, from what you just described to Cortex to T-Rex to NGA. I mean, I know you were very instrumental in getting NGA to put their headquarters here. So what have been some of the most exciting projects that you've done, and which ones do you think have made the most impact on St. Louis?
Actually, I think the one that has the greatest impact right now in its real time is the NGA. What we didn't know what we didn't know about the NGA. I mean, it was a secure facility south of downtown. And, we did know that there were 3,000 employees, but we didn't understand the impact that it had globally, nationally. And I say we knew that they had 3,000, but not really. I mean, but the impact that it had to the city's economy and to the state's economy. And so the fact that we were able to retain it, I mean, it now means that the state continues to get almost $8 million annually from the withholding taxes that the employees have. There are 3,100 employees. Mm-hmm. The city continues to get the earnings tax, which is a little over $3 million. So had this facility moved to Illinois, the state of Missouri would have lost $11 million, essentially. And that was in 2014. Today, that same group, whose average salary at that time was $75,000, today that average salary is a little over $101,000. And so that multiplier of impact to the state. But what that has led to is the development of an ecosystem we call geospatial, which is the location technology that they're famous for. So if you're going anywhere in the world, you probably have your phone or your GPS. The people who are responsible for that location technology are these folks.
Right.
You know, so if you're a boat out in the or ship out on the ocean or airplane flying, where you are in the world is based on the information
what
that
they're
these
doing.
What they're doing. So they have a great impact on us. That's what I call the social aspect everyone now knows about. But it's all of that things that they help do for the Defense Department that people don't know about that is equally as important. But we found now that after we got started that there are about 27,000 people that are working in the location technology area within St. Louis and at places where we weren't really thinking about. I mean, obviously, Enterprise, Rental Car, Boeing, Bayer, major companies, but they have a portion of their company that's voted on precise technology, location technology.
Right.
But we also know that there are a number of major companies that are supporting the NGA, and they would tend to fly into the city of St. Louis, meet for a couple of days, and fly out. And so I think with the initiative we have now that we're trying to figure out how to get them to locate here, and then grow this ecosystem. And with the new format that former Director Cardillo was thinking, which is a little more open technology, less secure, that they intend in this new building that they are building, about 20% of the space will be non-secure so that they can interact with the developer community that does not have that secure clearance. And so they're going to be doing something different. We are hopeful that we are able to then take advantage of that and get more innovation, more entrepreneurial types that can interact with them at that location. And so fortunately for us, we have Arched Park with Jason Hall's help and with folks who are working through the T-Rex and Cortex and St. Louis University and the University of Missouri. All of those stakeholders are working together with us to try and grow this ecosystem. And so this has been great.
I can see future articles
yeah.
You know, that are talking about the success and the economic impact.
We're about to roll out a plan that will essentially be very similar to the roadmap that was published about 20 years ago by Battelle Institute for the bio STL, the whole bio industry that now is globally recognized.
Huge, right.
And so we think that with the consultant that we have, Techonomy, that when they roll out their report, which should happen within the next 30 days, that will be the roadmap for growing geospatial. And so it will give philanthropic community and corporate community a path forward as far as how to contribute toward the growth.
Yes, right. I want to dive more into that, but we need to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Otis Williams. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So, Otis, tell me a little bit about Geo Futures.
Geo Futures is the advisory base that we have put together. And so we've done this with a number of stakeholders involved. Fortunately for us, we have someone leading our efforts there, Andy Deering, and being supported by what I call our kitchen cabinet with Jason Hall and myself and a number of others who are working to try to ensure that we can advance the growth of the ecosystem that's geospatial. And so Geo Futures is the banner in which we're moving forward. It is a consulting group that is named Techonomy, who's leading our efforts. And they are essentially looking at all of the what we call baseline data to understand where we are in this area through a number of interviews and public meetings and I call them frequent meetings with the advisory group. There are about 45 of us in an advisory group under the Geo Futures Advisory Group. And the disciplines range from the university types to folks who are corporate and users of geospatial, people who are working in geospatial, the NGA. So it's a broad spectrum of people. And the Geo Futures was put together with the idea that we would replicate what happened about 20 years ago with BioSTL. When we know where we are now, we're globally recognized in the bio arena and in the ag arena. And so this is an effort to put together a roadmap, a path forward, such that we can all rally around and everyone will know what our goals are and how we intend to get there. And so it's going to give the corporate community, the philanthropic community, all an opportunity to find a place to help
to
us.
To get involved.
To get involved and to help us move this forward. We see great things, really, because there are over 27,000 people who are working in the geospatial ecosystem now, and not many people recognize this in the sense that great companies are very involved. So we're all about location technology. When we use our phone, when we travel, everybody needs to know where they are, and all of that happens as a result of this
geospatial.
It's geospatial.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about SLDC, St. Louis Development Corporation, because a lot of our listeners may not even understand, you know, what is the mission? You know, what are some of the initiatives that you're involved in? Can you tell us a little bit about that, Otis?
St. Louis Development Corporation is the city's economic development arm. And I always say that economic development is a team sport. So we only do this with folks who are in the same sphere. So we work on a daily basis with the Chamber, with the Alliance STL, and with the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership, Missouri Partnership, as well as the Department of Economic Development for the state. And locally, we have what we call community organizations that we work with as well. Most prominent would be the Downtown STL group that we work with. And so we interact with those folks, and our mission is to try and grow the St. Louis economy, the city of St. Louis's economy. And our goal is to retain businesses, to help businesses expand, and to work with our partners to attract businesses to the city and region. Mm-hmm. And so all of that is to maintain and build our tax base so that we can provide constituent services to citizens.
And that is done how? I mean, through tax incentives, tax abatements?
We have
can you tell a little bit about that?
Yeah, our goal is to assist the businesses, obviously. And so when there are things that need to be done, we essentially look at ways that we can help. We have done that through a number of federal programs, being able to coordinate those things, things like the New Markets Tax Credit Program and the Opportunity Zone. But locally, one of the tools that we use, and essentially it is called tax abatement and tax increment financing. Those are tools that can be used where taxes that were generated by the project itself can, in fact, help finance that project. We don't give money to people. Many people think that when they think that the city of St. Louis is incentivizing something, is that we are writing a check. You know, most often the headline will say the city just passed a $10 million TIP. And we immediately get social media and others that says, you know, you guys can use that $10 million over here. What's happening is that we're generally trying to incentivize something that is not doing anything at present. I'll give you an example. So a project or a property is currently paying $100 in taxes. Through our incentive, we may have a project that will occur on that site or at that location. That property now generates taxes. That's, say, $2,000. I'm just giving an example.
Right.
And so you are increasing the amount of taxes being generated on that. You know, and so what happens on a tax increment financing issue is that half of that goes to the development and half goes to the city. So we're still 1,000% better off.
Right.
I mean, that's that's an extreme example.
Sure.
But it is a real example of how the value. And we don't do anything that does not provide the city of St. Louis with a return on investment. And I can say that that's the case over the last 4 years. In previous years, probably when I first arrived, I would call it feel good because we were in such need and desire. I think we have transitioned to where we have a plan going forward.
And I know that you and I have talked a little bit, and for you, transparency is very important, right?
It is.
It's very important to the citizens, and it just goes back to what you said at the beginning about integrity. You want it all out there in the open. You don't want to do anything that, you know, somebody couldn't look through a glass wall and see what you're doing. So
That's exactly right.
Makes sense to me now.
So our goal is to, for all the things that we incentivize, we would like for there to be a portal for the public to be able to look and monitor how well we are doing. And we're going to win a lot, and we may, you know, not win some, but everybody will see.
There's nothing hidden. So, Otis, right now we are kind of in a little bit of a crisis state, I would say. There is the pandemic of the coronavirus that is affecting everyone right now. I mean, there's fear, obviously, from people about getting the virus. There's an economic impact. And I know that you recently had a meeting with the mayor about this. So can you tell us a little bit? I mean, what would you say to the citizens of the greater St. Louis area right now about this pandemic?
Well, obviously, we're working with all of our partners. So this is an integrated approach from the federal government, the state, and the region. Each jurisdiction and each responsible entity needs to do the right thing. And there are guidelines that health officials have put out, you know, about washing hands and about the distance from people and about a number of things that are good practice. And so we're all pushing those things, but for the government, in this case the local government, you know, we need to be able to respond to the needs of the citizen. And so, you know, the question is, well, are we going to close down? The government is not going to close. We will be the last
the last man standing.
We'll be the last man, you know, because that is what we do. We are here to provide service to the citizens, and I think the citizens look to that. The virus is having a great impact economically. Obviously, for the city of St. Louis, one of our bread and butter areas is tourism and the hospitality industry and events. And so the fact that major events and conventions and at this point any meeting over 1,000 people won't happen within the next 30 days for sure. That will have a major impact. So we are meeting with our partners to figure out how we can assist those small businesses and businesses that are impacted. You know, we don't have that golden bullet right at the moment,
right.
But we're sort of trying to sort through that. And as I said, what we knew on Monday is not what we know today, and we're reacting differently than what we would have done Monday. And so next week we will be reacting differently. And so as we know more about the impact of the virus and we get more testing equipment and more things that can help solve this problem, we think that we will be able to react better at that point.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to be a party to the hysteria. You don't want to do that, but yet at the same time, we do need to take it seriously.
That is correct.
This is very serious.
This is very serious, and so you need to be responsible, do the right thing, and I think that's what we're all asking. So if you are quarantined, you should be quarantined. If you are working from home, work from home. If there are ways that employers can provide an opportunity for employees to work from home, that should be one course. You know, I know we want people to continue to go and do the things, you know.
To live life.
Mm-hmm. But they need to be responsible as they're doing it.
Yeah, and I've also said this is a time for unity and not division.
I mean,
we need to come together as a community.
You know, there are so many things that people had planned, and their schedules have all changed. But
we're all in the same boat.
We are. I mean, I never would have figured that I would be at a time when all of the major sports leagues have canceled or postponed their leagues.
We would never have dreamed that, right?
No.
Yeah. But got to be ready and prepared.
That's correct.
To be agile. So this is something extra. This can be somebody in your past, presently. Is there a team member that you want to talk about, and what was there something extra in your opinion?
Well, I think the person that impacted my life the most is, believe it or not, my high school band director.
Oh, okay.
And
what instrument did you play? Were you a trombone?
I was a trombone player.
I have the lips.
I have those lips. But his name was Timothy Adams, and I guess maybe I was 13 when I met him. He may have been 23 or 4.
He was a young whippersnapper.
But he came with lots of energy. And even before I went into the military, he was one of those guys that talked about honesty, and he would always use the phrase, stick to it. So he came in, and he changed the culture of our high school in the sense that our band, the band that I was not yet in, was known to play different kinds of music. He introduced all of us to cultural and symphonic kinds of things, and he would take us to hear, I mean, I think maybe the ninth grade I went to my first symphony. I probably, with under any other circumstance, I probably in my lifetime would not have gone to that as young, you know, at that period of time. But I got to understand and appreciate different music, and that was what he was all about. And, you know, I obviously, being an African American, I grew up in a culturally rich environment where it was very spirited music, and so I got to appreciate the Beethovens and Bachs.
Bachs and the Beethovens and the Mendelssohns.
Yeah, and appreciate that music, and then to appreciate country and western, which was not something that I liked at that time, but have since.
He opened up your eyes.
He did.
Wow.
But he was also the person that insisted on being a good music technician, which led me to be able to get a scholarship to go to school. So I went to college on a music scholarship, and I probably would not have been able to go had I not gotten that scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of why I say he was a great impact, because the fact that I was able to go to college and the fact that what I learned from him in high school is things that I probably would not have otherwise.
Well, I love that story. Thank you for sharing that story. And I always say sometimes the teachers, the coaches in our life, sometimes Otis are the unsung heroes, aren't they?
They are.
I have a similar story, you know, of a teacher that really, really impacted me. So to all the teachers out there, thank you for what you do. Keep doing it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You're impacting people, whether you realize it or not. So what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs, or the something extras? It can be more than one, Otis.
To be a very effective leader, I think that you have to have integrity. Now, harping back to that, because I think that people have to be able to trust what you're doing. And I also think you have to be an honest person, and you have to be able to have people trust you. I think your actions are sort of key. So the people who follow you, if they see what you're doing, and if you're doing, quote, what you think is the right thing, they'll know whether it's real or Memorex.
Right. There is high responsibility, though, isn't it? Because people are watching you, whether you realize that or not. I love, you probably know Danny Ludeman.
Yes.
Otis. And I remember Danny saying, I watch people's feet more than I watch their mouth. And I've never forgotten that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really is. You've got to walk the talk, because if you don't, that trust is not going
to
be there.
One additional thing I think I would say is that I think as a leader, you have to be able to prepare the next generation. And what makes my day is seeing some of the young folk I have on my team and
you
see
the
growth.
You have a lot of them. You have a lot of young folk.
That was intentional because I knew that the workforce was aging and that we needed to instill and grow, you know, a new leadership group. Every day, one of them will do something that just makes me feel like a parent. You know, my own kids, I always feel good about when they're successful. But when these kids are doing good things, and they are, just by, you can sense it by all of the good things that are happening in the city.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot packed in there, but we don't have time to unpack all of it. But I want you to be able to tell the listeners, is there something exciting that's coming up that you want to talk to them about?
Yes. The city of St. Louis has been for a year now going through development of an equitable economic development strategy and a framework that we want to use going forward. And our goal is to be able to cover the entire city. And so for such a long time, people have said the Central Corridor has been where our focus has been. And we want to be sure that we are intentionally and have a plan to try and address what's happening in North and then Southeast mm-hmm. St. Louis and all over the city. This framework will be published. It was an effort, has been, I call it a labor of love, where we have had public meetings, we have had online interaction. We are, you know, talking to a number of stakeholders. We have an advisory group as well, and we're at this point getting final feedback from them on recommendations moving forward. And so we hope to be able to unveil this at the end of April. A little of that depends on our ability to interact with our consultants who we had planned for them to travel, but we'll see.
Right.
We'll see how all of this works.
You may have to do a Zoom call. Now, how will the public know about this? I mean, is there a website that
there
they
will
can
be
go
a rollout
to?
Event? So we're going to there will be a rollout event, but people can actually now look online, go to our website, stlouis-mo, if I call it mo, mm-hmm. mo.gov. But you go to the SLDC website, and there's a link there that will lead you to the Equitable Economic Development Framework, and you can look at where we are. But when it is rolled out and it is introduced, there will be a public event.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. Otis, thank you so much. I know that you've got a lot of things on your plate right now, so I just cannot even thank you enough for just making the time to be here and educating our listeners, and I look forward to what's going to come down. You've still got a lot of initiatives in you, I think.
There are a few out there, yes.
Very good.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.